Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
This is Meet the Press with Tim Russert.
Our issues this Sunday, former Bush Press Secretary Scott McClellan rocks Washington and rattles the White House.
That was Meet the Press on June 1st. Last Friday, host Tim Russert died of a heart attack in the NBC offices in Washington. For legions of Russert fans, it was a shock. Tributes have poured in. And now the question, what comes after Russert? Not who takes his job exactly, but what will TV punditry be? Will it be this?
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Is Scott McClellan a patriot or a weasel? That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo.
Or will it be Keith Olbermann style?
The war in Iraq, your war, Mr. Bush, is about how you accomplished the derangement of two nations and how you helped funnel billions of taxpayer dollars to lascivious and perennially thirsty corporations like Halliburton and Blackwater.
This hour, On Point TV news, analysis, and punditry after Tim Russert. Joining me first today from Westchester, New York, is Peter Boyer. He's a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. His newest piece out this week is called One Angry Man. Is Keith Olbermann changing TV news? Peter, it's good to have you with us again.
Be with you again.
Also with us from Syracuse, New York, is Robert Thompson. He's director of the Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Bob, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Boyer, first to you. You've looked closely at Keith Olbermann, so you've got his model in mind. How would you describe the Tim Russert model that's being so widely bemoaned as his loss is mourned?
Well, it's an interesting thing about Tim. I happened to be working at the New York Times when Tim made the transition to television, and he was, in a way, regarding the standards and proprieties of NBC News, he knew completely that he wasn't of the journalism cathedral, if you will, and so he made it a point to.
This is a man coming out of politics, out of Senator
right.
Daniel Patrick Moynihan's office.
Exactly right. He was an attorney. He was coming from the circle of insider politics into first NBC. As in an executive role, and then finally on camera, which, by the way, no human being relished more than Tim. Mm. And he made such a point of being in the middle. I mean, I would say that the single thing he accomplished was he, in a strange way, he was the very pinnacle of the conventional wisdom in Washington. Mm. That sounds like a backhanded compliment, but what I mean is. He made it his purpose to be, you know, Washington's not a particularly radical town, mm-hmm. as you might have noticed, and Tim was, he knew what the room was thinking in a way and what it was going to be saying tomorrow, and that was his great talent, which is a very different thing than staking out a position and arguing it either mm-hmm. overtly or subtextually, which increasingly people in our business are doing.
Bob Thompson, that high-attitude kind of TV news punditry, no one is unfamiliar with at this point. There's already a lot of it out there. When Tim Russert would go over to MSNBC to do political analysis, as primary polls came in or whatever, he sat side by side with it, and yet there's a big void. Everyone's pointing at it, staring at it. Right now, with Russert gone, does the high-attitude school of TV punditry expand, grow, to fill that void?
Well, I think high attitude was already well on its ascendancy long before Tim Russert died. His death certainly knocks one more person who kind of stood for that old school approach to thing out of the arena. But already, if you especially look at primetime during the 24-hour cable lineups, attitude is certainly what's delivering their audiences. The big question is going to be, will this reflective period about Tim Russert somehow make networks and cable operations reconsider that this vacancy, this void that Tim Russert's passing has created, make them think that maybe that's a void that they want to fill. And I think that's what we're going to have to see. Needless to say, after this 72 hours of absolute hagiography that's been going on honoring Tim Russert, got to think there's a lot of kids in journalism school right now who are thinking, maybe this is the route I should take. The question will be, is there going to be any buyers for it, which doesn't seem to be the direction for the most part that television news operations have been going in.
Meet the Press on Sunday, a lot of long faces, a lot of sadness there and beyond. Also, a lot of very high praise. Tom Brokaw sitting in for the departed Tim Russert, referring him, as David Carr reminds us in the Times, to variously as priest, cardinal, and then his friend Mike Barnicle of Boston, a pope. Peter Boyer, you've been looking at Olbermann and people around him, describing him as a transformative figure in broadcasting. Went into sports and changed sports. Now he's doing that in news.
Yeah.
So is there a transformation still going on here? And do you think, begin to extend into Russert territory, right into those sort of real conventional wisdom, mainstream media halls, Meet the Press?
Well, you know, I really do think that's the question. I know that the question was being asked, and without satisfactory answer, at NBC before Tim Russert died, and Tim was one of the people who was asking it of himself and of others. I talked to him just a couple of weeks before he died about this, on this very subject, and he said, you know, my personal concern is, as long as I am not, he didn't use the word contaminated, but that's what he meant, by the environment, people know who I am, they know what I do, I'll go on an Olbermann show and then go off, and people say, well, that was Tim Russert on the Olbermann show. The problem is that the two environments cross over. There are no clear boundaries on, for example, an election night when many of the principals of NBC News, what we think of as being NBC News, appear on a cable platform such as MSNBC,
right.
and the network's main coverage is co-anchored by a man who just the day before, the night before, was screaming at a political candidate that he doesn't support.
Who you're talking, Keith Olbermann, co-anchoring with Chris Matthews.
That's exactly right. And there are an awful lot, not just of Republicans, who, of course, have long maintained a perceived bias, a liberal Democratic tilt in the media, but now a good many Democrats, after this very bruising primary season, who have a pretty clear idea who it is that MSNBC, and therefore, to some degree, NBC, has been rooting for. And aside from the practical effect that might have on whatever value there is to objectivity, or at least the perception of objectivity on the part of a network, there is the real question of, you know, this cocooning effect. Do you just get your information from places that are going to give you information that you already agree with? And that's something that people like the executives at NBC and folks like Bob have to wrestle with.
Let's hear a little bit of Tim Russert. In fact, from the day he died, he appeared regularly on Washington's WTOP radio Friday mornings. Here he is in his last interview there last Friday, June 13th, the day of his heart attack, talking about the need for journalistic vigilance in an age of internet rumors and smears.
There are big differences on big issues between John McCain and Barack Obama, the war in Iraq, Iran, Social Security, taxes, and you don't need to get into this other stuff. And if it surfaces, I think the mainstream media has an obligation not to just instinctively put it out there without vetting it, or if it is in fact something that is manufactured as part of this virus, report on that. Who did it and why?
Turn to the other side of the sidewalk, and it's not rumors and smears, but it is high attitude, plenty of opinion, right up front. Here's Keith Olbermann. This was just in December, an example, lacerating the president and vice president as leaders who are, his words, unfit to serve.
We have a president too transcendently stupid not to have asked whether the fairy tales he either created or was fed were still even remotely plausible. the pathological presidential liar or an idiot in chief. It is the nightmare scenario of political science fiction, a critical juncture in our history, and contained in either answer, a president manifestly unfit to serve, and behind him in the vice presidency, an unapologetic warmonger who has long been seeing a world visible only to himself.
An idiot in chief, an unapologetic warmonger. Bob Thompson, does that attitude, some brand of that attitude, now maybe move into Meet the Press? Does it begin to overshadow Meet the Press and the more conventional mainstream network shows?
Well, I think the networks have to ask themselves that question, and I hope that isn't what they decide. You know, first of all, we should say there's nothing wrong with high attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is really a place for that in the civic conversation of this nation, and certainly we have a long, long tradition of it. This whole notion of objectivity and quote-unquote mainstream coverage is actually a relatively new invention. Many, many newspapers were invented as vocal tools of political parties.
Though when you say relatively new, you're really talking decades old at the same time.
Right. I think a couple of big things. The development of the penny press, which then decided that it was going to have to start depending upon advertising, which meant it was going, as opposed to subscriptions, which meant it was going to need to appeal to the widest readership possible, which meant they didn't want to offend any side. And essentially, objectivity was a marketing tool developed to make sure you maximize circulations of your papers. And then when the wire services came out, like Associated Press and so forth, they were collecting information for a wide variety of papers that might have been affiliated with all kinds of different parties and so forth, and they furthered that objectivity notion because they were distributing to papers that they didn't necessarily know what their particular
where they were coming from. Bob Thompson, hold that thought if you would. In Syracuse, Peter Boyer with the New Yorker, please stand by. We're talking about TV news and analysis after Tim Russert. Let's listen to just a little bit from just last week, June 11th, while interviewing Mayor Rudy Giuliani, pundit host Sean Hannity slipped up and more or less said he was a surrogate for Senator John McCain.
Senator McCain has shown a little bit of reluctance in terms of going after some of the controversies of Senator Obama. As he balances the, you know, should he run on ideas versus, you know, go after the weaknesses, that he's not really an agent of change, that he's a typical quintessential politician, where would you balance?
I think, first of all, it's different being a mayor and being a presidential candidate. And I think that you're going to find that in both cases, Senator Obama and Senator McCain, a lot of the attacking is going to be done by surrogates. And they're going to, well, I mean,
people like me.
Right. A lot of the attacking is going to be
McCain
done,
surrogate.
No, I'm ahead of
by surrogates.
The Stop Obama Express.
And look, a lot of these points are valid points. We have to examine people's experience. We have to examine their judgment.
Giuliani, the attacking is going to be done by surrogates. Sean Hannity, people like me. Peter Boyer, what about the carrying of water? Tim Russert may have been conventional wisdom, and some will see that as high praise, and others will be very critical of it, but there was not the sense he was carrying water for one side or another.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think on some level, part of the this great, as you noted, this protracted sort of mourning period over Russert has to do with the sense of, you know, losing something that he represented, which does have, I think, a very real value. And, you know, we do, the answer just seems self-evident to me to the question, is it a good thing that you have two sides in our political discussion? Partisanship, of course, is the stuff of democracy. But if you have only two sides standing on either side of a dividing line yelling at each other, after a while, the yelling becomes the point, which is, in a way, what Sean Hannity was asking Mayor Giuliani. People like Sean and Rush Limbaugh, worry that McCain is not going to go after Obama enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, McCain has indicated that he might not. And that is a greatly, deeply dispiriting thing for conservatives coming into this election.
But not to worry, says Hannity, if he doesn't, surrogates, I, in his case, himself, he said, I will.
Yes, well, I think Sean Hannity would be doing that even if McCain were so inclined himself. That's part of, I think part of what Bob was saying is that this has been here, this sort of partisanship has been here, but it has not, there's a reason why it's called the mainstream media. Rush and Sean and that stuff has not been the mainstream. The real question is whether or not there has been such a thing as objective truth, or at least the pretense to, the conceit of, that has governed the mainstream media. I think there has been. There certainly has been all of my life, all of my professional life. And I think that is at risk of being lost. And I think there's a real value there.
I want to look further at O'Reilly Olbermann, who you're probing in your piece, Peter Boyer. But Bob Thompson, what about it? I mean, you're quite right. It's been going on a long time. There have been times in American history when the press was highly politicized, and everybody took that for granted. But it's been a long time now, maybe half a century more, that there was the goal of objectivity. Tim Russert, in many ways, represented that. He's a big fish here in a big venue. And you know how TV executives are thinking about their dwindling numbers. When he goes away, are you confident that that stays out there? We have no doubt that the high attitude stuff will go on. But does the objective pursuit of news, truth, does that stay out there as a goal, Bob?
Well, I'm not confident, and I'm worried, because I agree. I think this invention of objectivity in the mainstream press, and let's face it, objectivity is a tough, there is really no such thing as it, but some attempt to get to the facts and the data, I think, is really important. And one of the glories of the modern press, I think, has been this attempt and these journalistic ethics to do so. And in a nation this large, Jefferson understood this when he was talking about how we needed highways to bind this huge nation. Ben Franklin, when he was talking about a good post office. I think to some extent one needs a vast, great center to kind of, in big issues, eventually get everybody to grudgingly agree to a certain set of issues. The mainstream press was crucial, for example, in making the civil rights movement move in the direction that it did and finally become accepted. And without that, I think that wouldn't happen. The two reasons I think we really need the mainstream press. Number one is I think there has to be a set of data that all of us as citizens agree on. And when we get to this divided cocooning issue where everybody who agrees with one political set of opinions listens to O'Reilly and everybody else who agrees with the other ones listens to Olbermann, and unfortunately Olbermann's supporters don't listen to O'Reilly and vice versa, which would be a lot more healthy. What happens is we get to a point where we can never rationally make decisions about things as citizens, because there is no basic agreed-upon fact. There are people out there who are still looking at all of the science and saying, whatever science, we're not going to teach evolution. Whatever the stuff about the environment, there's no effect and no global warming. When we get to the point where you can simply stop an argument by saying, oh, that was reported in the New York Times, and the New York Times is part of a vast leftist conspiracy, therefore anything reported in the New York Times is not on the table as data for discussion. That, to me, is taking the idea of partisan high attitude and moving it in the direction of sheer anarchy.
But certainly the high attitude guys are very ready to say that everybody's in the tank with them. Here's Bill O'Reilly, October 07, last fall, interviewing former CBS newsman Bernard Goldberg and Fox News contributor Jane Hall, railing against NBC.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't work, Bernie, and I don't think you would either, I don't know about Jane, for any organization like NBC, which is in the tank, dishonest, has been dishonest, and doesn't deserve any credibility. If you're working for them, you're part of it.
Do you want? You want everybody to quit?
Bill.
Yeah, I would.
Is that our future, Peter Boyer? You've chronicled, and many know, O'Reilly and Olbermann's sort of epic battle. Maybe that's the background of that clip right there.
Well, that is certainly part of our future, of course, because it's part of our present. But again, that stuff exists at the margins, and the question is whether or not the tide is going to bring it to to the more to what we call the mainstream, what Bob refers to. You know, there is, of course, no such thing as an objective truth that's going to be agreed upon, but there is such a thing, and that this is what the mainstream news media have mostly strived toward, as the consensus truth. The idea of civil rights is a great example. It is important to the functioning of our country. It's important to the functioning of the healthy functioning, it seems to me, of our society, that just for example, in the war in Iraq, however you view it, it is important to sort of have a basic agreed upon understanding of these are the facts. It is very difficult. You have to do a lot of work to really have a self-secure sense of reality regarding the questions leading up to the war. One side believes that Bush lied, people died. The other side believes, you know, that's not true. Saddam posed a danger, an existential danger. And somewhere in the middle, actually, there are ways to go find it, but it's very difficult in this environment to find the truth. Is the surge working? You know, I asked Olbermann, let's just say, just hypothetically, that the surge in Iraq turned out to have been a good thing.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, it might lead to something like American victory. If I am an Olbermann watcher, can you imagine the circumstance in which I would ever hear that so that I could, you know, do the arithmetic of the political arithmetic in my head and just make my own decision?
And he said?
No. The surge may seem like, some people are calling it a success. I'm telling you, the surge is a failure. It's like a Bob and Ray routine. It's a distraction. And they said, well, that would involve complicity by people like David Petraeus and General Odierno. Yeah, that's exactly what they are.
But on the right, you've got that same kind of ideological presumption, whatever the facts may be, here we go. And in the middle is the democracy trying to figure out what to do and doesn't want to do it just on the basis of opinion.
Well, that's right, and the question is whether the stewards of the journalistic medal, if you will, are going to continue to value that. I think they will. I think, just by the way, on Meet the Press, that is going to be just exactly what it always has been. It's going to be, the conventional wisdom of Washington, or it's going to be the consensus truth, or whatever term you wish to use.
But maybe with a little less broad shoulders there. We've got lots of listeners waiting to join. Let me turn to them, Peter and Bob. Ellen is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have both a comment and a question.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is that I think it's been wonderful that the media, in addition to praising him as a journalist, have also been praising Tim Russert as a man. As someone who was honored to have them as neighbors on Nantucket for many years, he truly was a superb human being. And now my question is for your panel, Tom. When people like Olbermann, O'Reilly, etc., explode, is part of what we're doing turning television journalism into entertainment? Is it becoming like the WWE, because the networks feel that unless they're just outrageous and over the top, they're not going to hold the audience, especially at prime time when people want entertainment and not news?
Let us pick it straight up, Ellen, and thanks for your call. Bob Thompson, and let me put that question to you in this context. I mean, Peter was saying, you know, it was hard to know the facts before Iraq. Well, there was Tim Russert. He was sitting right at the helm. He got to interview everybody. Maybe he didn't ask tough enough questions. So is the explosive side just entertainment, or might it, does it, has it served a purpose as well? If Olbermann had been in the Meet the Press chair, would he have been more skeptical before the war in Iraq about assertions being made?
Well, I mean, again, the explosive side has a place. I certainly don't wish that we would get rid of O'Reilly and Olbermann and all the rest of them. I think there is a real place in our conversation for that. But I also believe, for all of its problems, that this return occasionally to this consensus center is really important. And there is, for one thing, the idea that news and entertainment are blending. in this country at least, news was always part of entertainment. You always depended upon having to sell it to an audience. It wasn't coming from some mysterious utopia. However, there were periods in which it was kind of segregated. For example, in the Glory Murrow years of CBS, CBS really was operating as kind of a fiefdom that, for a while anyway, got to do what it wanted to do. The direction as far as the future of this kind of mainstream consensus place, even the way we talk about it, everybody refers to the nightly news on the networks as being dinosaurs, no longer relevant. O'Reilly says this virtually constantly. The fact is, I think we have to assess whether or not that's true factually, and they get $25 million per night. Yep. If you add the three up. That's not the case anywhere near it when you add the three other ones up. But then when we look how network executives are behaving, I would say Nightline. Ted Koppel is a good example of the Russert school of pretty mainstream consensus stuff, and that is always on the verge of losing its time slot to a comedian.
And, of course, it's
a comedy that's doing some interesting civic stuff.
Right. And of course, he's gone. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a call from Nick in Brookline, Massachusetts. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. Good morning. Hello.
Hi.
Anyway, love your show, Tom. Been listening to it forever.
Thanks.
A couple quick points. The first one is that his ratings were great. He had 4 million people on a Sunday morning. Most people go to the beach during the summer or whatever, and those ratings stayed the same. So there's almost no chance that they're going to turn that into a kind of a parody or cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And to boot, you know, you look at George Stephanopoulos' show, he leans left, and people notice that. And, you know, if it wasn't for George Will, you'd be moving in that kind of direction that you see in Olbermann or an O'Reilly. And I think in the evening, too, a lot of people just put that stuff on for the purpose of entertainment. They're political buffs, but, you know, they look at it and they see it as relatively entertaining. And it's only a few, you know, I mean, that's how I see it. I think there's a bright future. And the fact that everybody's mourning it so much, mm-hmm. I think, is an indication of the desire to have another Tim Russert on your Sunday morning show. I mean, I've no question in my mind that they're going to try to replace him with somebody. I mean, you know, I was just thinking of Jim Lehrer as being such a wonderful replacement for Tim Russert.
Somebody of like style, you're hoping, you're thinking, but Peter Boyer, maybe so, maybe that's right, but what do you think? Will the market demand that? You report to us that the networks looked at, that CBS looked at Keith Olbermann for the anchor job. So, you know, they've looked from the mainstream quadrant into that sector.
Yes, that is exactly right. I mean, I think they're, in a way, it's two separate questions. I think the broader imperatives of the media, more broadly speaking, dictate that there will always be something like a consensus center. You can see it even in the internet and the various other new media. There is a center to be found.
Really?
I think there are. I mean, I think there are blogs, for example, if you're interested in politics. Mm-hmm. There are blogs that you can go to that are essentially blog versions of the points of view that you'll find on O'Reilly on the one side and Keith Olbermann on the left. But there are those that are, you know, go to Politico, for example. Mm-hmm. That is something like the mainstream press. I mean,
pick your flavor, even the middle, if that's what you want.
That's just exactly right. So, I mean, I think they will exist. A separate question is, in terms of short-term business decisions, it is true that CBS did talk to Keith Olbermann about taking over CBS Evening News, and an argument can be made that it might have worked in terms of short-term ratings.
Brian's calling from Hartford, Connecticut. Brian, you're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make about Tim Russert is that while certainly he's a respected journalist, he's not necessarily any more straight arrow than anyone else. I mean, he's his pretension was to inhabit some sort of, you know, center, some sort of conventional wisdom, but that itself is a political position, right? I mean, it's not, it's speaking for the status quo. It's not necessarily politically conservative as in the Republican Party, but it's certainly socially conservative.
Is it a necessary, is it an important position, even if it's a posture in itself, you say, Brian?
If I could just say one more thing, I mean, Mustard is sort of, is he creating the center or is he inhabiting the center, right? So, you know, him pretending to be the conventional wisdom makes people think, oh, this is sort of a consensus opinion, but that's not necessarily so. It's Tim Russert's opinion, or was. And so I think that while I'm not a big fan of O'Reilly or Oberman's rants, it's good to keep in mind that all of these commentators, no matter who they are, whether they seem to be left, right, or center, have a point of view.
Brian, it's a great point. Peter Boyer, what about it? You know, was that in itself a creation, the sort of idea of the center? And do we need that creation, even if it is a kind of artifice?
Well, I suppose that you could put it that way, but it's kind of a self-correcting process. TV has ratings, and TV journalists read political polls, especially Tim. I mean, Tim was in that business, and he, you know, almost expressly said, "This is where the country is. Now let me ask you this question, Mr. Candidate, or Madam Senator, or whoever it was." I mean, so it was self-creating in a way, but it was more sort of one of self-recognition. I think, of course, there is absolutely a need, in some ways, our system mandates sort of this more antic and opinionated high attitude, as you've put it, Tom, stuff on the margins. I mean, Fox News is an entire enterprise that came into existence and has thrived based on the premise of filling a void, that void being the right within. I mean, their conceit was that within the mainstream media, there is nobody, you know, the mainstream media is in fact center left, and so we will come on and be center right. And indeed, there was a void, because people flocked to Fox News. They believed that they were getting, you know, the sort of more liberal position from, forgive me, NPR and the networks and public broadcasting and CNN. And if we want the truth, as they perceived it, we'll go to Fox. What is evolving is, from within the mainstream, you are getting more of this pointed sort of antic, opinionated journalism, and that's what we've been able to see at MSNBC, which is the only cable network that actually derives from the culture of a mainstream undertaking, which is NBC News.
Certainly, MSNBC, plenty more attitude. Here's just last month, again, Keith Olbermann, who you've been talking with, Peter, after President Bush said that he'd stopped playing golf to, quote, show solidarity with the families of troops, Keith Olbermann took him to task.
The war in Iraq, your war, Mr. Bush, is about how you accomplished the derangement of two nations and how you helped funnel billions of taxpayer dollars to lascivious and perennially thirsty corporations like Halliburton and Blackwater, and how you sent 4,000 Americans to their deaths for nothing. It is not, Mr. Bush, about your golf game.
Let's go to Helen in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Helen. Are you high and dry? We hope.
Yes, I am high and dry.
Good,
thank you.
Good. What do you think, Ellen?
No, my comment is my personal feeling is that the media already has been lost, as we should have it. I attended the Media Reform Conference in Minneapolis a couple of weeks ago, spent 3.5 days with about 3,500 people.
And what do you mean when you say it's lost? What does that mean to you?
I think that the press, they are no longer journalistic people. I don't listen to any of these pundits on the cable news shows. They scream and yell, interrupt one another. It does not benefit our democracy to have people on the air like this.
But let me ask you, Helen, maybe before the Iraq War, if there had been a little more screaming and yelling and less courteous questioning, maybe the facts of the, you know, prelude to that war would have been on the table a little more clearly. What do you think?
Yes, I marched in Washington in January of 2003 because I knew that Bush was lying to us. And the press, you know, really didn't cover it all that well. So I just I just think the press has really let down our country.
Let's get another view on this. Helen, thank you very much for your call. I want to go to Nate Persley. He's professor of law and political science at Columbia University. New book just out last month, Public Opinion and Constitutional Controversy. Nate Persley, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We're remembering Tim Russert and, more importantly, his style, his approach to his job, and looking out at where we may go now, how the media is evolving. You hear Helen in Ames, Iowa, saying the press has really let us down as a democracy. She's worried about it. What do you see? Do you see more polarization coming? And does the press still work in nurturing the democracy if polarization and attitude are the hallmarks of the day?
Well, I mean, there are three different things you're talking about there. One is the polarization that we're seeing from the variety of options that people have, not just on television, but also through talk radio and the internet, et cetera. And so now, unlike before, one is able to choose one's news source, and to some extent that leads to preaching to the converted. And so, therefore, people are more likely to find news and information in a form that already reinforces their beliefs, as opposed to before when, if you had limited options, you were then exposed to some beliefs that might pull you in a different direction. So that aspect of sort of media terrain is a little bit different. Now, of course, there's always been media outlets that have been more opinionated, and you know, the history of media over the last 200 years, you know, recounts many examples, especially of newspapers.
Yes, we've looked at that.
That had done that. But I think the difficulty now, it's ironic that it's because of the variety and the options and the freedom that people have to choose that therefore you're going to have this trend toward polarization and more fragmentation. And so it's sort of one of the downsides of that freedom is that they're not being forced to listen to an opinion that they might disagree with.
Bob Thompson, do you think that this new sort of flavor of media that's emerged in the last decade so prominently is driving polarization or simply reflecting it? That's the way the country is.
Well, I think there are the two elements are in a dance together, and neither one is leading. They're both in a symbiotic relationship. I agree with Peter that to an extent, Fox News was very much created to fill a market gap. It's like when the Atkins diet came out, all of a sudden you saw all of this carb-free food coming on the market. The Fox News network was essentially the equivalent of that. However, I don't object to shouting. A republic is going to be a noisy, ugly form of government, and I think shouting is an important part of the whole civic equation. But, you know, there isn't just this difference. We're talking about a dichotomy between high attitude and some kind of utopian objectivity. But if we look in the days before cable, looking even at a guy like Murrow, who we all kind of genuflect when we talk about, this guy occasionally would go on a rant that was far from objective. His famous report about the migrant workers, Harvest of Shame, some of the best work he ever did, when he went after McCarthy, one of the most famous broadcasts of all of television news history, he was taking a point of view and he was hammering it home like nothing we'd ever seen before. But that was still part of a mainstream sort of presentation. Every now and again, of course, the mainstream is going to move in various directions to the left and the right. The civil rights era and the Vietnam era of the late 60s is a perfect example where you have Walter Cronkite, of all people, actually doing an editorial thinking, maybe it's time we get out of this war. So this is a complicated equation. I think the network's job now, as far as their public service, is their job is now to negotiate this. We are in a fragmented universe. We are in a place where everybody can get so much more information than they can before. If ever we needed good old-fashioned, Russert-like, Cronkite-like mainstream news coverage, we need it now. And one of the jobs that they need to do is take all of these claims that are made by bloggers and high-attitude types and everything and subject them to some data. I think of the great metaphor I'll always think of Russert representing, which we all do, which is, of course, holding up that whiteboard with numbers. Here was a guy.
Year 2000, election night, everybody wondering what's going on.
He was sticking to the data. Here was a guy who was actually using math to describe what was going on. And that's an important thing to do. I think when all is said and done, if you go to the data and you go to the facts, such as they may be, in the end, that's the only way we can make important civic decisions.
Peter Boyer, what would Olbermann say? Edward R. Murrow, one of his heroes, does he want to subject the claims to data, or is that not the way?
Well, in fact, Bob just made two points that Olbermann would seize upon, one being that Murrow would go out there. He would go to the edge of the mainstream with Harvest of Shame and with the McCarthy broadcast. But
of course, he'd literally also go out there, which we don't see much from Olbermann. I mean, he's chained to that desk and kind of pundits around him.
Olbermann is wholly a studio creature, which in fact is almost the definition of the species. I mean, he exists for that hour in prime time to bloviate, to do what he does, and in that sense, as long as he is there, that is, again, I agree completely with Bob that the more noise, the better. The question has been that same individual within 24 hours is co-anchoring the network's election coverage, and that is the trick for an enterprise like NBC News.
And, of course, the same thing, or its equivalent, happening on the Fox side of that ledger. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to John in Nashville, Tennessee. John, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I would just like to posit that this is not high attitude. It's low attitude. And what I'm getting at here is that the incendiary nature of all these shows, it, from my mind, started with Morton Downey Jr. It just, I try to figure out what appeals to human beings with this stuff, and all I can figure is that, unfortunately, the noise and the anger, it appeals to a human base emotion, which is anger, and that's the sad part about it, and I think that is why people like Tim Russert, is because there was some kind of evenness there, and all these other people that are screaming and shouting, even though I agree with a lot of what Keith Olbermann says, it's all the same kind of stuff. It's like the more you titillate people, the more they respond to it. But unfortunately, what they're titillating is a base part of our nature as human beings, which isn't healthy, in my opinion.
John, thanks for your call. Let's hear a little bit of just what you're talking about here again. 2005, November, San Francisco passed a ballot measure urging campuses to ban military recruiting. Here's Bill O'Reilly on the attack.
Want to ban military recruiting? Fine, but I'm not going to give you another nickel of federal money. You know, if I'm the president of the United States, I walk right in to Union Square. I set up my little presidential podium and I say, listen, citizens of San Francisco, if you vote against military recruiting, you're not going to get another nickel in federal funds. Fine. You want to be your own country? Go right ahead. And if Al-Qaeda comes in here and blows you up, we're not going to do anything about it. We're going to say, look, every other place in America is off limits to you except San Francisco. You want to blow up the Coit Tower? Go ahead.
There's the shouting part. What about the rusted part? George in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. There was a Russert standard, which I think is totally different from the so-called objective journalistic standard. In his interview with Bill Moyers on Bill Moyers' piece about the run-up to the Iraq War, Russert said that when he talks to government officials, everything is off the record unless they tell him it's on the record.
Mm.
That seems to turn so-called journalistic standards on their head.
A little buddy-buddy
so
for you.
That was Russert's attitude, and I would venture to say that it's not the mainstream media, it's the corporate media. It's about business, it's about politics, and it's about money. And Russert was never really a journalist, and nobody seems to have mentioned the stuff about Valerie Plame, in which he didn't really come clean to his audience, as far as I can see.
Never a journalist. A lot of people on this day and this week in particular would argue with that. But Peter Boyer, you know, you can hear there a hunger for even maybe the shouting isn't all people need, but for something more aggressive on the mainstream side.
Well, the mainstream, and I would just beg to differ from the caller, Tim was a journalist in the literal sense. He didn't begin that way, but he became more a journalist than most journalists. And what he did when he would go off the record is what every beat reporter does, and that was in Washington, the government was Tim's beat. He would have conversations with people off the record. And would ask permission to cite by name a source. If they said no, he didn't. Regarding Valerie, that's what I mean when I say Tim was the very pinnacle of the conventional wisdom. He literally represented the consensus view of that, pardon the term, town. And that was valuable. It's never... that is never going to satisfy folks like that caller who I'm sure would have preferred for Russert to go use his hour, railing against Doug Feith and the Bush conspiracy. Mm. But that wasn't what he did.
Well, the TV news king of that town and of many fans' hearts gone this week. And I appreciate all of you for helping us look ahead from this moment. Peter Boyer with The New Yorker, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Certainly, Tom.
Nate Persily at Columbia Law School, thank you for joining us, Professor.
Thank you.
And Bob Thompson at Syracuse University, always great to have you. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.